Welcome to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine's Fiction Podcast. I'm EQMM's editor, Janet Hutchings. Last month, our podcast featured the winner of the 2018 EQMM Readers Award, Stacy Woodson. This month, we present that year's third place scroll winner, a story by a writer who has previously won an EQMM Readers Award and has received nominations for virtually every other short story award in the field, including the Edgar Allan Poe Award. In recent years, David Dean, who got his start in our Department of First Stories, has been writing a number of stories about what he calls feral children, children left largely to fend for themselves in contemporary suburban America. The following story is one of them. Here is David Dean reading his story Sophie from the March-April 2018 EQMM.
Blaise squatted in the damp patch of woods, studying the candle he had lit. It was a long white taper, and he had found a discarded soda bottle to act as a holder. Though there was little breeze, sometimes the flame guttered and smoked before once more flaring into brilliant life. Brushing a lock of his dark brown hair from one eye, the 9-year-old boy waited as the late afternoon darkened toward evening. Something white glided into the edge of his vision, and turning, he found Sophie had joined him. They often met here after school, though he could never be sure when or if she would show up. Their first meeting had been 7 months before, when his mother's latest boyfriend had chased him out of their 2-bedroom rental house in a drunken rage. Escaping into the woods that bordered their neighborhood, Blaise had come to the spot he was at now. Weeping, he had not seen nor heard the 7-year-old girl follow him, had only become aware of her presence when she touched his hand. Startled, he had snatched it back, turning his face from her. When she took his hand a second time, he did not object, and they sat in silence until his tears had ceased. Blaise had seen Sophie often on their street, wandering without apparent purpose or company, been aware of her in the corridors of their school like a wan, ragged phantom. Pale, with smudges beneath her ice-blue eyes, Sophie squatted next to him now without a word, wrapping her thin arms around her knees. Blaise noticed that her lank blonde hair was damp with droplets of moisture, her pastel pink sweatshirt and tights stained and streaked. She coughed. The two sat side by side, watching the dancing flame in silence until Blaise asked, "You want to wear my jacket?" Sophie shook her head and said in her small voice, "Where'd you get that?" Meaning the candle. "Father Gregory gave it to me at church," Blaise lied. "Why?" "It was for me helping out at Mass." Reaching inside his jacket, he removed another candle from an inside pocket and held it out to her. He had stolen both on his way out of the sacristy. "He said you could have one too. It's even been blessed." This was the second time he had given Sophie a gift. The first had been a plastic tiara that he had stolen from the backpack of one of his classmates. All the girls had them because of some movie everyone had seen. Taking the candle from him with a slight smile, Sophie looked the gift up and down as if she were unfamiliar with such things. "What do you do with them in church?" "We bless throats with them today." "Why?" Shrugging, Blaise explained, "'Cause it's Saint Blaise's day, and he was like the best saint for blessing throats. Supposed to be done with candles." Sophie scrutinized Blaise for a moment, her brows knitting in confusion. "Your name, Blaise," she observed. Feeling his cheeks grow warm, Blaise answered, "Yeah, I know. I'm named after him. It's kind of stupid, I guess. That's why it was such a big deal for me to be the altar server." Sophie coughed into her hand, then wiped it on the sequined unicorn on the front of her shirt. "Oh," she said. "Let me show you," Blaise went on, blowing out his candle and removing it from the bottle. Taking Sophie's from her cool fingers, he crossed the two like an X, holding each by its end. "It's like this," he explained, placing the scissor-like arrangement to either side of her throat. "Then you say the blessing." "Okay," Sophie said, holding very still, looking into his face. Blaise concentrated, trying hard to recall the words the priest had used. We pray for the intersection of St. Blaise, Bishop and Martyr, to bless Sophie's throat and up close, he could see several purplish bruises around her neck, almost hidden beneath the shirt. And keep her from being sick or anything bad, and just, you know, take care of her and don't let anything happen to her. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, amen. Lowering the candles, he added, "It's not exactly right, but it's pretty close." He gave Sophie her candle back. "Thanks," she whispered. "You won't get a sore throat now, probably." He wished he could invite her to stay at his house, but he knew his mother would never agree, even though there was no boyfriend currently living with them. The last had left after noticing a portable electric heater sitting on the edge of the tub as he ran his bath, its coils faintly glowing. It had been late summer. It bothered Blaise that Sophie would have to go home to whatever awaited her there. It was rumored that her parents cooked meth in the house. Blaise's mom had warned him to never go there, that it was dangerous and unhealthy. He pointed at the smudges on her skin. "How'd you get those?" Sophie's face tilted down and she said nothing in answer. After a few moments, Blaise looked around and realized it had grown almost completely dark. "Well, I have to go home now." Sophie nodded. Then Blaise took her hand and led her out of the woods and onto their street. Releasing her, he watched as she walked away without a word, taking very small steps as she made her way home. She did not look back. Just before turning onto the cracked, uneven pavement of her walkway, Blaise saw her slide the candle at the sleeve of her sweatshirt. Then she was gone. Hiding his own candle within his jacket, Blaise waited for a few moments longer, studying the tilting mailboxes, the sagging fences, the jumble of cars parked along their street, then set out for his own home. The following day, Sophie did not appear at school. When she had not returned for two more, Blaise went to find her. Still wearing his backpack from school, he halted on the sidewalk in front of her house. The tiny dwelling was not much different from his. The roof shingles were curling and a chest-high chain-link fence enclosed the yard. Blaise noticed that black plastic garbage bags had been taped over the windows from inside. One casement was missing a window altogether and had been boarded over with a sheet of plywood. Swallowing hard, he pushed open a gate that hung by a single hinge and went through. He did not see the blunt-faced, big-headed dog until it came charging round the corner of the house, snarling and grunting, its pink and black mouth thrown wide, fangs bared. Without time to cry out, he backpedaled, tripping over his own feet in his terror. Reaching the end of a long chain at the same moment, the slavering canine, with a surprised yelp of pain, was snatched back to land with a thud on its slat-ripped side. Scrambling back to his feet, Blaise saw the front door fly open and was confronted by a tall, shirtless man with ribs as prominent as his beast's. His long, patchy hair swept back from his cadaverous face with what appeared to be a handful of petroleum jelly. "Who the hell are you?" he asked Blaise. "What are you doing on my property?" He held up one hand to shield his eyes from the weak, wintry daylight. There was no part of this man that was not decorated with a colorful swirl of intertwining images, everything from motorcycles to guns, naked women to fire-breathing dragons, gravestones to angels. Blaise didn't know where to look first to make sense of it. "You better not run," the man warned, flipping a cigarette butt onto the wiry grass. He nodded at the dog, now back on all fours, barking and straining at the chain. "I cut him loose, you won't get 10 feet from here." Blaise shook the hair from his eyes and forced himself to speak. "I need to see Sophie. She hasn't been to school. And I brought her homework. Her teacher told me to." This last part wasn't true, but Blaise thought it might add weight to his presence there. A short blonde woman materialized out of the darkness of the foyer behind the man, peeking round him at their visitor. "Who is that kid?" she asked, in a deep, raspy voice that seemed too heavy for her slight frame. Like the man, she sported a number of illustrations, as well as piercings through her sparse eyebrows, ears, nostrils, and lips. "I'm Blaze. I go to school with Sophie." "She's sick," the woman replied, still staying out of the light. "Can I see her?" "No, you can't see her," the man answered. "She can't do no homework, for Christ's sake. Her mother just told you she was sick." The man's lips appeared to stick together, making a smacking sound each time they parted. His pupils were so large that Blaze thought he looked like a marmoset at the zoo. "Just leave it with us," he heard the woman croak. Thinking hard, Blaze countered. "I'm supposed to have her sign that she got it. The principal says so." "Oh, bullshit," the man spat out. "Get your scrawny ass down the road before I lose my patience. Nobody sent you here. You're just that little punk that she's been sneaking off to see, ain't you?" He took a step out onto the porch. "What do you two do out there in those woods anyway?" "What? You think I don't know about that? I've got eyes everywhere." He came down two steps. "Have you kissed her yet, Studley Do-Right? What else you done?" When he stepped off onto the muddy lawn, Blaze took off running, his short legs pumping, his lungs sucking oxygen. Two houses away, he glanced back over his shoulder and saw that the man had not followed, heard his braying laughter. Blaze stopped. Licking his lips, he raised one small fist above his head, then allowed its middle finger to spring up. "Screw you, crankhead!" he sang out as loud as he was able. His laughter breaking off in the middle, the man leapt toward the dog and its collar. This time, Blaze didn't stop running until he was home. On Friday, Blaze approached the office with almost as much trepidation as he had Sophie's house. Though familiar with the school's administration personnel, it was not a welcome relationship. In this place, he had few secrets and even less leverage. Mrs. Reeves snorted when she noticed Blaze standing at the counter, reminding him of a water buffalo, huge, skittish beast he had seen on TV programs. Her great winged hairdo did not lessen this impression. After rearranging a stack of mail to her satisfaction, she finally turned her attention to Blaze. "Did Mrs. Chamberlain send for you again?" she asked, referring to the principal of the school. Blaze shook his head, his thick hair swinging across his eyes. "Who did then?" "Nobody." This gave her pause. "Then why are you here? Are you sick? You should go to the nurse if you're sick." "I'm not sick. Sophie is." Blaze felt his voice catch at her name. He took a deep, shaky breath. "I was just wondering when she's coming back." "I see," the water buffalo answered, drawing in her horns a little. "Well, Blaze, I'm not sure that's something I can tell you. You see, we're not allowed to give out medical information on students, providing that we even know it in the first place. I wish I had..." "Her name is Sophie," Blaze repeated without hope. "Sophie what, sweetheart? I have to have her last name to even begin." "Caldwell," the admissions secretary called out through the open door of her office. "He's talking about Sophie Caldwell. Her mother withdrew her from school 2 days ago. She's gone to live upstate with her natural father." "Well, I guess that's that then," Mrs. Reeves said, regarding the top of Blaze's head for a moment before adding, "At least you know she's not sick anymore, Blaze." "She wouldn't go." Blaze spoke to his feet, but loud enough to be heard. "I beg your pardon," Mrs. Reeves began. "She wouldn't go without telling me," he went on, looking up now at Mrs. R. and the admissions officer who had just stepped out to see if she could help. "Sophie would have said goodbye." "I'm sorry, young man, but I've got the paperwork in my office," the admissions lady assured him. "It was all kind of sudden, so maybe she just didn't have time to say good." "That's bullshit," Blaze announced with firmness, his face set and tough, an intimation of what he might someday be. "Blaze O'Connor," the water buffalo snorted, her horns lowering once more. "You go right into Mrs. Chamberlain's office and tell her what you said. Do not turn your back on me, young man. If you go out that door..." Never looking back, Blaze flew through the hallways and out the main entrance, mounting his second-hand bike on the fly and standing on the pedals. Though he knew he had no hope of escaping the school's retribution, he was content to postpone it. He needed time, though for what exactly, he didn't know. Bumping and jolting his way along the trail, Blaze made his way through the band of woods that ran through his neighborhood. Here and there, candy wrappers and cigarette butts festooned the path, along with crushed beer cans and condom wrappers. Skirting the local cemetery, he spotted the flickering of candles, their flames dancing inside red jars that had been left on some of the gravestones. Emerging onto his own street at the same spot he had last seen Sophie, he halted to ensure that no police cars or other agents of adult authority were present. Satisfied, he thrust a pedal downward and launched himself ahead, swerving round the garbage cans that had been placed out at the curb. Jumping his wobbly steed up onto the sidewalk as he neared Sophie's, he spotted a bicycle leaning against the cans in front of her house. He slowed to a stop to examine it. It was a small pink bicycle with a bell on its loose handlebars, the grip sporting tattered plastic ribbons. Sophie's bike. Whatever plan that had been formulating in Blaze's mind evaporated like a waking dream. Then the dog spotted him. Bumping back out into the street, Blaze made a clumsy U-turn as the dog announced his presence. Barking ferociously and flinging itself against its restraints again and again, it seemed determined to either reach Blaze or kill itself in the effort. Moments later, Blaze attained the shelter and concealment of the woods once more, the demon hound's ragged barking grown faint. Panting with exertion, he hung over his handlebars trying to understand what he had just seen. He couldn't imagine Sophie leaving her bicycle behind. Always a late starter, she had only recently shed her training wheels. If she had really been sent to be with her dad, why hadn't they sent the bike with her instead of throwing it out with the garbage? He knew now that he had to get inside Sophie's house. Even with a week of in-school suspensions as a result of his behavior on Friday, Blaze found time to prepare his plan. Each evening, after his mom had gone to bed, he eased himself out his bedroom window, carrying whatever packaged meat he had succeeded in shoplifting from the supermarket on the way home. It wasn't hard. All he had to do was find a woman alone who was about his mother's age and follow behind her, stopping along the way to look at the kind of products kids liked, such as sugary breakfast cereals and packaged donuts. To the store clerks, it appeared he was simply lagging behind his mom, something they were accustomed to seeing. If anyone was actively monitoring the security cameras, it would look much the same. The only dicey part was the actual snatching of the packaged meats and concealing them in almost the same motion. But Blaze was both practiced and bold, and his luck held. When he rolled up to Sophie's house, the dog was looking for him. The first night, Blaze had simply flung the meat within reach of the baying creature and quickly pedaled off again into the darkness. The second night, the dog ceased barking when he saw Blaze withdraw the package from his jacket, his eyes glittering in the moonlight, then fell upon the offering as if he had not eaten since the boy's previous visit. The third night, he was simply waiting, staring into the direction he had seen Blaze arrive before, rising up to place his forepaws on the fence in anticipation of his nightly treat. Though he began to growl as Blaze dismounted the bike and drew closer, he didn't bark, scarfing the sliced bologna with a huffing noise, his terrible teeth mere inches from the boy's fingers. Tonight, Blaze risked touching his round, wrinkled head for the briefest of moments before giving him his meal. The dog allowed it with only the smallest of rumbles from somewhere deep within him. When he was done with the meat, he looked up to see that Blaze was still there, and his whip-like tail sliced back and forth. Blaze held his hand over the fence and waited. Lifting himself up onto his hind legs, the dog sniffed his benefactor's fingers, his flat snout dripping in cold. For several seconds, the brute danced round the proffered hand, taking careful draughts beneath the pale light of the moon. Then, satisfied at last, he licked Blaze's palm. Smiling at the animal, Blaze whispered, "Good boy, Tony." He didn't know why he named the dog Tony, except that it was the name he wished he had been given. "You're a good boy." Tony's tail whipped the cold air with increasing velocity as Blaze stroked the dog's scarred concave skull. From within the house, there came the bass pulse of rock music being played at great volume. Stars of light leaked out from tears in the ad hoc window coverings and seams where the cheap tape had fallen away. Seeping through the rotten window frames was a poisonous stench, part hospital disinfectant, part paint remover, a pong both nauseating and euphoric. Within, Blaze heard a male voice laughing, then that laughter dissolve into ragged coughing. Wrinkling his nose in distaste, Blaze noted the tiny house was completely lit, but for the far rear corner. This was the room that corresponded to his own bedroom at home, the room that he believed must be Sophie's. "Tomorrow, boy," he promised Tony with a final pat on his furrowed skull. Glancing over his shoulder as he rode down the moonlit street, he could see the silhouette of the dog watching his departure with concern. When Blaze arrived the following night, he found Tony busy digging, his broad forepaws tossing dirt this way and that, his chain stretched to its limit in the shadowy backyard. The house, like the other nights, pulsed with bass, glowing like a jack-o'-lantern round its windows and through its cracks and seams, the evil smell a pall of dread. Approaching the fence, Blaze whistled softly, causing the dog's head to come up with a snort, his wet nose caked with earth, his eyes fierce with alarm. When he saw who it was, he gave up his solitary occupation and trotted to the fence, eager for his nightly feeding. Blaze fed him by the slice, taking time between each offering to stroke the dog's big head. When there were only a few pieces left, Blaze let the dog gobble up the rest in a single gulp, then petted him once more. "Good boy, Tony," he whispered, before circumnavigating the fenced yard to arrive at the opposite corner. The dog walked along with him as far as his tether would allow, following the boy's progress with interest. Removing his jacket, Blaze laid it across the wire prongs that lined the top of the fence. Then, with one more glance at the dog, heaved himself atop it and over, landing on his sneakered feet. Tony was silent, the chain straining, only the side-to-side motion of his hindquarters revealing his delight with Blaze's company. Blaze breathed out, his exhalation a silvery mist. Removing the screwdriver from the back pocket of his jeans, he moved toward Sophie's darkened window, noticing that, unlike the other windows in the house, it was uncovered. As he neared, he could also see a cinder block standing on one end beneath the window, and instantly grasped its significance. Like him, Sophie liked to come and go as she pleased. It would make his task both faster and easier. Stepping up onto it, he placed his face against the cold glass, attempting to peer in, but could see little other than the suggestion of a dresser and a bed in the darkness. When he attempted to raise the sash, it slid upwards with bumps and shudders, and he returned the unnecessary screwdriver to his pocket. Framed in the now open window, the thudding music grew in volume, and the man and woman's hoarse, drunken voices surfaced through the sound, their shouted words disjointed and incomprehensible. Like the time he had huffed gasoline, chemical stench rocked Blaze's senses. Stretching his pullover shirt to cover his mouth and nose, he slid over the sill and into the room. When nothing resulted from this, he whispered, "Sophie, are you in here?" At the same moment, he risked switching on the tiny LED light he had removed from his mom's keychain and swept it round the room. The brilliant beam revealed brief black and white glimpses of a rumpled, unmade bed and a small dresser with a cracked mirror and a mismatched chair in front of it. A hairbrush lay on this last, strands of fine blonde hair caught within its bristles. Coming to an open closet, Blaze saw several of Sophie's Goodwill outfits hanging haphazardly within, an equal number lying in a pile on the dusty floor beneath. Blaze knew it was unlikely she would have left behind her clothes and her hairbrush, but not impossible. Her dad may have promised to buy all new things for her. But he did know what she would not have left behind. Like his own room, he could see that Sophie had little furniture within which to hide anything. But he searched anyway, coming to the bed last. Dropping onto his belly, he shone the light beneath. Besides the tiny dust ball set into motion by his activity, there was only a single object, a cardboard shoebox. Retrieving this, he placed the flashlight between his lips and removed the cover. When he saw what lay within, he stood absolutely still, feeling his heart slow, growing heavy as if it had been replaced with lead. His vision swam, then cleared once more. Slipping the lid back on with thick, clumsy fingers, he set the box down on Sophie's rumpled bed, feeling a righteous fury growing inside him. Looking round the lonely room, Blaze spotted a broken crayon lying on the dresser. Picking it up, he stalked to the hall door and placed an ear against it. Besides the music and the accusatory conversation that erupted from time to time, there was nothing else. All the activity appeared concentrated at the front of the little house. Cracking the door open, he peered out into the hallway. Seeing that it was empty, he opened the door all the way into the room and began to write in large blocked letters on its grimy white surface. The voices rose and fell, approached and withdrew. Blaze kept at it. When he was done, he stepped back to view his handiwork. It read, "Where is Sophie, bastards?" Sophie's name having been misspelled by the 9-year-old boy. Satisfied with his handiwork, he eased the door shut once more, leaving the couple to find his message when they next passed down the hall. Snatching up the shoebox, he climbed back out the window. Seeing Blaze emerge, Tony began to make small leaps, his tongue dangling from his open mouth, his tail slashing back and forth. Ignoring him, the boy slipped back over the fence and retrieved his bike. Hurrying down the midnight street, he clasped the box under his arm, breathing through his mouth and pedaling hard. Reaching the spot in the woods where he and Sophie had met, Blaze stopped and jumped off his bike, letting it fall to the ground with a crash. Sitting down hard on the damp earth, he opened the shoebox once again, illuminating the objects it contained with the penlight. There, in the harsh glare of its beam, lay a plastic tiara studded with fake jewels. Next to that, a white candle. Blaze lowered his head and wept. The voices were back, rising and falling in the near distance, anger, guilt, and fear informing their cadence and flow. Blaze struggled to open his eyes, fearful he had fallen asleep in Sophie's room and was about to be discovered. A third voice also entered into the fray, defensive and familiar, a woman's voice, Blaze's mom's voice. His eyelids fluttered like butterflies caught in a big fist, then flew open. The voices were in his house. The couple was here. His mom was alone with them. Leaping from his bed in his t-shirt and sweatpants, Blaze threw open his door and rushed toward the living room. Sliding in on stocking feet, his sudden appearance halted the argument mid-sentence, his mother's curly head swiveling to catch his arrival. The tattooed man and the pierced woman stood side by side looking at him. "That's him," the man accused Blaze, pointing a finger at him, capped by a dirty broken nail. "He was snooping around our house just the other day, and I had to chase him off. Now he broke in and wrote crap on our walls. That goddamn kid ain't right." "Don't you call my son names," Lysa's short, feisty mother fired back. "I won't stand for that in my own home." She turned to Blaze. "Is what they're saying true, Blaze? Did you go to their house last night?" Staring back at the couple, Blaze noticed that both of them were missing teeth and patches of hair like dogs with mange. "I was looking for Sophie," Blaze answered, his chin tucked in. She lives with her dad now, Sophie's mom croaked. That's bullshit. Blaze, his mother cautioned. Watch how you talk. That's where she is, Sophie's mom insisted in her hoarse monotone. She won't be coming back here no more. She lit a cigarette with a shaky hand. At least you were man enough to admit it, the boyfriend said, his voice grown reasonable, calm. I didn't want to have to call the police. A warning will do this time. Blaze, honey, his mom began. What in the world am I going to do with you? Go ahead and call the police, Blaze challenged. I dare you. You little son of a bitch, the man fired back. I ought to rip you. That's enough, Blaze's mom shouted. I want you two off my property right now. Who the hell do you people think you are coming in here threatening me and my son? Turning to the woman, she snapped. And you, who gave you permission to smoke in my house, you nasty skank? Like a conjuring trick, a cell phone appeared in her pudgy hand. I've got the police on speed dial. What do you say we just discuss this whole thing with them right now? Sophie's mom retreated to the door, opening it and stepping out onto the porch, the cigarette still going. The man stood his ground, his sore-looking marmoset eyes sliding over Blaze and his mom. You don't want me for an enemy, he warned them. You don't want that. I do, Blaze snapped, taking a stance next to his mother and staring back, shoulders squared. You going or not? Blaze's mom asked, her fingers hovering over the phone keys. The man backed out the door as Sophie's mom hurried to the jacked-up truck they had arrived in. I know what to do, the man assured Blaze. You know that I do. He left the door standing open and sauntered down the walkway to the truck. A moment later, he fired up the engine and roared off down the street. Blaze turned to his mom just in time to have her palm glance off his cheek. Stunned, all he could do was stare at her, seeing the tears standing in her eyes, her face gone pale. Blaze, she cried, what is the matter with you? Those people might have killed you last night. Can't you see that, honey? Dropping to her knees, she seized her son's shoulders and shook him. You're all that I've got, Blaze. She pulled him to her bosom, pleading. Please, honey. Don't do crazy things like that, okay? Not anymore. Promise me? Choking back his own tears, Blaze lied as he had done often enough before. Okay, Ma. I won't. I promise. So, you think Sophie's mother and boyfriend have done something bad to her? Mr. Allard, the school resource officer, sat across from Blaze. On his desk was a scale model miniature of a police car that he drove a few inches with his finger. Even though he was wearing khaki slacks and a pullover collared shirt instead of a uniform, and Blaze thought he had a likable enough face, he was still uncomfortable talking with a police officer. He nodded a little in answer to his question. Why do you think that? Her clothes are still there, Blaze said without explaining how he knew this. Mr. Allard studied him for a moment, but didn't ask the obvious. Well, he said after a bit, maybe she didn't want them. Her dad might be buying her new ones. Have you thought of that? She left other things behind, too. Like what? Shrugging, Blaze looked at the linoleum. Just some stuff. Stuff I gave her. Mr. Allard put his feet up on his desk, pulled a Nerf football from a drawer and tossed it to Blaze. Sophie, your girlfriend? He had heard the story of Blaze's visit to the office from Mrs. Reeves. Feeling his face growing warm, Blaze stared hard at the ball, unable to find words that adequately expressed his feelings about Sophie. He shrugged once more. So, you don't think she would have left those things behind, then? Blaze shook his head a little, his long bangs sweeping across one eye. Anything else you noticed? Chewing his bottom lip, Blaze thought this over, then added, they make drugs there. Mr. Allard sat up a little. Yeah? How do you know? Everybody on our street knows. Mr. Allard appeared to give this some thought. I'll tell you what I'll do, Blaze. I'll call Sophie's dad and ask to speak with her. If she's there, you can relax and know that she's all right. If not, well, We'll cross that bridge if we get to it. Okay, Blaze agreed, sliding down from his chair. He tossed the ball back to the officer. She won't be there. In the meantime, Blaze, you stay away from Sophie's house, okay? I don't want you getting into any trouble. Okay, Blaze agreed once more. When Blaze returned to Sophie's that night, he noticed right away that the chemical miasma was no longer present. The music lower in volume and, of more immediate concern, that Tony was not waiting at the fence. His heart sank with fear that the wicked couple, angry that Tony had allowed Blaze's earlier trespass, had gotten rid of the dog. Hurrying along the fencing, Blaze made his way around to the backyard, his breath making frantic little puffs of mist. Risking all, he switched on the pin light and swept its beam across the churned lawn. Tony's post and chain were no longer where they had been, the spot Blaze had last seen him digging appearing raked over, the furrows glinting with moist, tiny seeds. Swinging the beam over to the side of the yard beneath Sophie's window, Blaze spotted Tony watching him, his dark eyes anxious, his lean body quivering. His chain had been reduced to only a few feet of movement. In the silence, Blaze could just hear the dog's soft, pitiful whine. He switched off the light. "Tony," he whispered, hurrying on now to the far side of the fencing and closer to the dog. "It's okay, boy. I'm here. I brought you dinner." The dog remained immobile but for his shivering. Blaze noticed a hind leg kept a few inches off the ground. A couple of fresh cuts glistened on the dog's blunt head. Pulling his jacket off, Blaze prepared to throw it on the fence and clamber over, then froze. Behind the darkened glass of Sophie's window, he saw a movement. Not so much a movement as a slight change in the density of the darkness behind the glass. Tony continued to whine. "It's a trap," Blaze thought with a catch of his breath. "They were trying to lure him into the yard, perhaps into the house itself." Taking several steps back, he felt his anger growing even faster than his fear. The hellish couple had not only taken his only friend, but had hurt Tony and was using him as bait. In defiance, Blaze launched the meat over the fence to Tony, and with a heart smoldering like bellowed coals, turned and fled the scene. "The number on the transfer form was out of service," Mr. Allard explained to Blaze, "so I went by and spoke with Sophie's mom about it. She said it was the only number she had for Mr. Caldwell." Man and boy stood at the edge of the playground, the other children throwing them curious glances from time to time as they played in the late winter sun. "Told you," Blaze replied, then was struck by a thought. "You went inside?" Nodding, Mr. Allard replied, "Yeah, she invited me in." "So you searched the house?" "No, we just talked for a few minutes in the living room. I didn't have any cause to search the house. It's not that easy, kiddo. Besides, everything seemed okay. I mean, the place is a dump, I'll grant you that, but otherwise I didn't see anything wrong there." "No bad smells?" "No, Blaze. Nothing besides air freshener, which, judging from the housekeeping, they needed." Blaze considered how foolish he had been to write that message on Sophie's door. He had accomplished nothing but to give the couple a warning of their vulnerabilities, allow them time to plan. "I've tried to find a telephone number for Mr. Caldwell through 411 and the internet, but so far I'm coming up with nothing." Mr. Allard could see the disappointment and frustration in Blaze's stubborn posture, his closed, tough face. "Blaze, I would do more if I could. It's just that there are rules you have to go by as a police officer. It's not like on TV and in the movies. For me to search someone's house, I have to have PC. Blaze glanced up. "Probable cause," Mr. Allard clarified. "In other words, we can't just search people's homes based on someone's impression of them or neighborhood gossip. It doesn't work that way." "What do you need, then?" "We need evidence of a crime, or at least something more than mere suspicion. Sometimes we get those through a reliable informant. Not a child, though. Mr. Allard winked at Blaze. The courts don't normally go along with the use of underage informants. Sorry, kiddo. Blaze shrugged his unwilling acceptance of adult rules. What other ways? He asked after a while. It was Mr. Allard's turn to shrug. Well, I guess emergency circumstances sometimes get you there. Like if a police officer hears someone screaming inside a house, he doesn't have to get a search warrant. He can just go right in because he has reason to believe someone's life may be in danger. Oh, but that doesn't do us much good here. The school bell began to ring, signifying the end of recess. I have to go, Blaze said in a tired voice. Mr. Allard watched as the boy shuffled toward the school, the other children shouting and screaming around him, a sad, solitary figure with a defiant set to his shoulders. When he reached the entrance, Blaze turned and looked back at him for a moment, his face solemn and thoughtful. Then, with an unsmiling wave, he disappeared inside. Blaze caught the alarm almost as soon as it began to sound. Having set his clock for 4 a.m., he was betting that even zombies like Sophie's mom and boyfriend would be asleep by now. He swung out of bed, already clothed in his darkest hoodie and black jeans. Slipping his feet into sneakers, he listened for any sign that his mother had been disturbed. There was nothing. Easing open the window, he climbed out, being careful to close it behind him. Having left his bike leaning against the back of the house, he walked it out to the street, carrying the two items he had hidden behind some shrubs earlier. Though it was awkward, he managed to navigate his way without dropping anything or making any noise. As he had hoped, Sophie's house was completely dark, not a single light showing, no music blaring. Just to be certain, he remained in the shadows of the cars parked along the street to watch. When the chill of the early morning began to seep through his light clothing, he set the items down, then propped his bike against a car, its front wheel pointing toward home in readiness. Satisfied, he picked up the things he had brought and made his way along the fence to the backyard, stopping there to study the house once more. Tony was still staked beneath Sophie's window. Blaze could make out that the dog was staring at him from across the yard. Not daring to call out, even in a whisper, he raised a hand in salute. Tony wagged his tail in recognition. Blaze could feel his heart thumping. Throwing his jacket on top of the fence, Blaze transferred first one item, then the next to the other side. Taking a steadying breath, he followed, being as careful as he could not to rattle the chain-link fencing. Once on the other side, he picked up the first article, a slate paver he had removed from someone's garden, and worked it upright into the soft, raked soil near where the grass seeds lay awaiting warmer weather. That done, he picked up the next thing he had brought and walked toward the house, doing his best to stay out of the window's line of sight. Reaching the back wall, he opened the container of gasoline and began to pour its contents along the base of the wall. Stolen from a neighbor's shed, the plastic canister held only 2 gallons, so Blaze had to be frugal. It took him 5 sweat-soaked minutes to circumnavigate the small house and arrive back to where Tony awaited him. He glanced at the dark window, then continued quickly beneath it. Stopping only long enough to pat the dog's head reassuringly for a few moments, Blaze continued the trail of gasoline from the base of the house in a straight line to the patch where Tony liked to dig. Using the last of it, he doused the area as best he could. When he was done, he left the empty container where it was and hurried back to Tony. Managing to get the dog's collar off despite cold, clumsy fingers and Tony's face licking, Blaze dared whisper, "Good boy, Tony. You're a good boy." Once released, the happy dog began to run back and forth in the yard, favoring the injured hind leg. Delighted with freedom, he began to bark. With a scared glance at the window, Blaze ran to the gate, and disregarding the possible noise, threw it open, the screech of its unoiled hinge sounding like a scream in the silence. With his heart pounding now, He ran back to the nearest wall, fumbling to retrieve a wooden match from the box he carried. A light came on in the kitchen, its door mere feet from where he squatted. Tony continued to dash this way and that, barking with abandon now. His fingers so numb that he could not separate one match from the next, Blaze withdrew a handful and raked the entire bunch against the striker. Two caught, but the rest erupted in a chain reaction that scorched his fingers, causing him to drop them all onto the damp grass. One managed to fall onto the gas trail he had drawn, and Blaze heard a small whoosh of sound like a drawn breath. Then suddenly, a blue flame went racing in two directions at once. When one reached the trail leading away from the house, there began a third. Blaze turned for the open gate. Flying through, he was dimly aware of the kitchen door being snatched open behind him. Reaching the street with Tony at his heels, he heard the roar of the third flame arriving at its goal, saw the sidewalk and the cars parked along it appear in an orange glow, as if the sun had risen in a single moment. Beneath this concussive breath of sound, a man's voice cried out, "Fire! God damn it, fire! We're on fire!" Boy and dog raced for home. A short while later, Blaze stumbled out of his bedroom, making a show of rubbing his eyes to ask his mom, "What's going on? What are all the sirens for?" "There's a fire," she answered in a worried voice, peeking out the living room window. "Sophie's house is on fire." Blaze managed what he thought to be a surprised expression. "Really? Can I go see?" "No, you may not. There's too much going on right now. You could get run over in the dark." Blaze could see the glow through the open blinds, could feel the thumping of his heart still. "It was probably all those drugs they cook," he offered. Mom turned and studied him for a moment, as if she were thinking of something altogether different. "Blaze," she began, then stopped with a slight shake of her head. "Can I go later then?" he asked. "If the fire trucks are gone, you can ride by on your way to school," she said, then added, "Did you hear a dog barking earlier? It sounded so close to the house." Turning away, Blaze answered, "No, Ma, I didn't hear anything." He had yet to think up a convincing explanation for the dog in their backyard. Riding as slowly as he could, Blaze approached the house in the new light of day, the air heavy with the stench of charred materials, black, wispy tendrils of smoke still rising above the trees. Coming abreast of the residence, Blaze locked up his brakes and came to a complete halt. His mouth opened. The house still stood. Though scorched all along its cinder block foundations, only one corner of the roof had caught and burned, the opening blackened and soddened with water. A single fire truck remained on the scene, its crew joking and laughing as they cast a light spray of water on various points that appeared to smolder. It was the scene of the fire in the backyard that was drawing the most attention. There, Blaze could see several uniformed police officers, as well as three men in plain clothes, who he suspected were cops as well. They were all staring at the patch of burned earth and the makeshift marker that Blaze had left there. One of the men shuffled closer to the marker, being careful to avoid the charred soil. Blaze recognized Mr. Allard. At the same moment, he became aware of muffled voices and cries, a steady litany of barely audible cursing. Turning toward the source, he saw the tattooed man sitting in the back of a patrol car, his long, ugly face pressed against the smeared glass of the rear window, the veins in his forehead and throat distended with rage. He was looking right at Blaze, his mouth working and spewing invectives. In another police car, parked just behind the first, Sophie's mom sat, weeping and screeching. Blaze could see that they both had their hands cuffed behind their backs. Just as he had done on their first meeting, Blaze raised his middle finger in salute, but this time added a grim smile for good measure. When he looked away again, he saw that Mr. Allard was looking right at him. Lowering his arm, Blaze stood on his pedals and made for school. Mr. Allard caught up to him just after lunch, summoning him to his office. Unlike before, he didn't ask Blaze to sit. Blaze studied the items on Mr. Allard's desk. "How do you spell your first name?" Mr. Allard asked. Confused, Blaze looked up, then down again. "Blaise," he said. "Oh," the officer said after a moment. "I thought it might be Blaze, as in fire, like the one at Sophie's house this morning." Blaze refrained from looking back up, chewing instead on his lower lip. "Arson is an easy crime to determine," Mr. Allard continued. "There's always a fire, and that fire usually involves an accelerant, such as gasoline. The accelerant is pretty easy to locate and identify as well." Allard stopped speaking to let this sink in. Blaze nodded a little, as if a lesson in arson investigation was the reason for his having been summoned. "However, it can be extremely difficult to prove who exactly committed arson. Often the evidence needed is destroyed in the fire, such as fingerprints on the accelerant container. Another problem can be a lack of eyewitnesses, or at least witnesses that have any credibility, such as Sophie's mom and her boyfriend." This time Blaze did look up. Mr. Allard locked eyes with him before going on. "They must have dismantled their little meth lab before my visit the other day. Possibly they were worried that someone was on to them. I'm not sure who. Like the brainiacs they are, they had stored all that nasty stuff in a closet instead of getting rid of it. The firemen discovered it when they were checking the house for occupants. They had seen such things before and called us. The police, I mean. If the fire had reached the interior, Blaze, the entire building would probably have blown up and contaminated the whole neighborhood." Blaze tried to look away, but couldn't. "It's lucky for, well, it's just lucky that didn't happen, don't you think?" "Yeah, yes, sir," the boy answered softly. "There's something else, though, Blaze," Mr. Allard continued. "Whoever set the fire also left a marker, almost like a gravestone, on the burned spot in the backyard. That person had written in white chalk, 'Sophie is here,' with an arrow drawn beneath, pointing downward." He almost smiled. "I guess whoever did that figured us dumb cops needed some help. So, since I hadn't been able to reach your dad or determine her whereabouts, I asked for a cadaver dog to be brought to the scene." "What's that?" Blaze asked, his voice grown smaller still. "It's a dog trained to find buried or hidden bodies." "Did he?" "Yeah, he did." "It was Sophie?" "Yeah," Mr. Allard nodded. "We're pretty sure it's her." "Oh," Blaze said after a while. "Sophie's mom and her boyfriend are going to prison for the rest of their lives. I promise you that." Blaze felt a tear escape and slide down one cheek. "Good," he whispered. "Glad." The night after Sophie's funeral, Blaze returned to the cemetery accompanied by Tony. No marker had been provided her small grave other than a metal plaque that lay flush with the earth. On it was engraved her name and the dates of her birth and death. Having left his bike in the woods that bordered the graveyard, Blaze set the shoebox down and opened it. Removing the plastic tiara, he laid it atop the nameplate, then retrieved the two candles remaining inside. Using empty soda bottles as holders, he lit each one, then set them side by side on the grave. Satisfied with the arrangement, Blaze threw his arm around Tony's neck, and boy and dog kept watch over Sophie through the long, dark night.
Sophie is copyrighted by David Dean. Music for the podcast entitled Deep Roots was obtained from purpleplanet.com. Mixing was done by Jackie Sherbo. You can subscribe to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine, where you'll find more stories like this one, by visiting our website at www.elleryqueenmysterymagazine.com.